So today we're going to take up case 52 of the Blue Cliff Records, which is the Great Stone Bridge of Jao Jor. The case: I have heard about the stone bridge of Jao Jor for a long time, but I've now come here and found just a simple log bridge. Jao Jor said, "You see only the simple log bridge. You don't see the stone bridge." The monk asked, "Well, what is the stone bridge?" Jao Jor said, "Donkeys and horses cross over." Please sit comfortably. So here in this case, we meet one of the great masters of the Chan lineage, Jao Jor. And we meet him many times, in fact, in our koan study, four times in the Mumonkan, the Gateless Barrier, and about five or six times in the Blue Cliff Records. And we encounter Jao Jor also in case one of the Mumonkan, when a monk asks, "Does the dog have Buddha nature or not?" And Jao Jor said, "Moo." Jao Jor pointed directly to the heart of the matter in his response to the monk. Mu translates as "no thing." Jao Jor did not fall into some discursive discussion about whether the dog had Buddha nature or not. That would be more of a kind of dualistic mind, falling into there is Buddha nature, there is not Buddha nature, there is self, not self, mind, birth, death, and so on. So he didn't do that. And hence he presented the truth for us in this one word, mu, meaning nothing, nothing. Buddha nature is not a thing that is subject to having or not having. So we take up mu as our first primary koan in our Zen faith. And it's important to dedicate your practice, focus in on this one word, mu. Give your full attention to the matter. Hear it with your breathing. Mu on the out-breath, quietly to yourself. Carry mu as you walk around the dojo, step by step. Carry mu into the kitchen, or as you're eating your meals, or as you're zipping up the tent. Dedicate your energy to exploring and inhabiting this one word, mu. Another way you can work with mu is also turning it into a question. Ask yourself that question, what is mu? What is it? Don't use mu like a mantra, just a repetitive kind of mantra. That is just deadening the mind. Turning it into a question worked for me. What is mu? And then you're in the grip of that question. The question takes hold of you, grips you. And it's also a barrier because, in a way, you cannot figure this out intellectually. Your analytical mind cannot do anything with mu. And so it stops you in your tracks. And this is good for our practice, to be stopped in our tracks, to be really confronted with something that asks something more of us, to go deeper. So here in this case, case 52, we meet Jao Jor as well. And he's quite an old monk, and his reputation has spread throughout China. And it is said that he didn't start teaching till he was about 80 years old. And so his words were very simple and yet very profound. Came out of his mouth and his instructions. And Jao Jor is also the name of the province where the teacher Jao Jor lives. And in the province of Jiazhou, there's a magnificent stone bridge built in the later Han Dynasty. And the Jiazhou Bridge is the world's oldest open spandrel stone segmental arch bridge. There's quite a history here to this bridge in this case. Li Chun was credited to be the craftsman and the engineer of the bridge, which was constructed in the years 595 and 605. And it spans over the river Xiao River. Excuse my Chinese pronunciation. I always try to get instructions from Jean there about how to pronounce these impossibly sort of Chinese words. And anyway, it's the oldest standing bridge in China, and it's a World Heritage listed bridge. And remarkably, it's still standing today, 1,400 years later. And many pilgrims go to see the Jiazhou Bridge. In fact, it's quite a tourist site. And you can even put it, Google search it. It comes up with this magnificent picture of this bridge. It really is something. It's a remarkable engineering skill and design, and quite extraordinary. And in this case too, a simple log bridge is a bridge made of a simple one log spanning a stream. This is another story about this bridge, just to give you a flavour of Jiazhou here. One day, Jiazhou was with his head monk looking at the stone bridge when he asked the head monk, "Who built this?" The head monk said, "Li Chun built it." And Jiazhou said, "When he built it, where did he start?" The head monk had no reply. Jiazhou said, "You are always talking about the stone bridge, but when you are asked about where it was started, you don't even know." So he scolded the monk. Also, one day when Jiazhou was sweeping the floor, a monk asked, "Teacher, you are a man of knowledge. Why is there dust?" Jiazhou said, "It is something that comes from outside." And again, the monk asked, in a pure and clean monastery like this, why is there dust? Why is there imperfection in the world? Why is there impurity in this pure and clean monastery?" And Jiazhou said, "There's another little bit," referring to the monk. Something that came in from the outside. So Jiazhou was a very fluid mind here. He uses simple daily things like bridges and dust and paths to awaken the person. And in this case, the monk enters the monastery looking for the great master Jiazhou. He cannot see beyond the appearance of things and probably encounters Jiazhou in his simple work clothes, mindfully raking the leaves in the monastery grounds. Intentionally downgrading Jiazhou's grandeur, this monk questioned him, saying, "For a long time I've heard about the stone bridge of Jiazhou, but now that I've come here, I just see this simple log bridge." Jiazhou immediately said, "Will you just see the simple log bridge? You don't see the stone bridge." So we come into session two. In some ways, just like this monk, we can't see the great stone bridge. We only see the simple log bridge, the mind that's log jammed up with stories and expectations and planning mind and thoughts and so on. The ordinary mind. And just like the monk here, who had expectations of meeting Jiazhou, this great master, and his reputation was, he was well known in China. And so this monk had a host of expectations, and we too can come into Sesshin with a host of expectations. Expectations of our teachers, expectations of your practice, expectations about enlightenment and what it is and what it isn't, expectations of yourself. And we come here and there's this beautiful place and this beautiful day. We want to sit peacefully and quietly here in this gorgeous place. And then we come into the dojo and our mind is anything else but peaceful and quiet on the first day of session. It's full of logs, all jammed up. Or your mind is all over the shop. And so expectations just simply get in the way. Expectations are never the shining clear reality. They're like a veneer over reality. They distort reality and prevent us seeing clearly, seeing the Tathagata just right here as it is. So Zen Master Jiaozhou immediately said to the monk, "Well, you just see the simple log bridge, you don't see the stone bridge." Zen Master Jiaozhou's mind was fluid and played with the confusion and interchangeability of person and place as a teaching device. He is saying, "You don't see the great stone bridge of Jiaozhou. You don't see the expansive, selfless heart-mind of Nirvana, where all beings cross over and abide here. Donkeys, horses, and perhaps even small-minded monks." Jiaozhou embodied the great stone bridge. He was not separate from that stone bridge. His heart-mind was mature, his realization broad, expansive, and open. It allowed and welcomed all beings and the 10,000 things to cross over. Perhaps here there is also a slight pun on even donkeys and asses, like the monk in this story. You too can cross over. There's hope for all of us. Jiaozhou embodies the way that is open and broad and expansive and inclusive mind. So our practice too is to become like Jiaozhou's great stone bridge, allowing the wombats and the forest and the frogs and the sky and the person sitting next to you and each person and each thing to cross over right here where you sit. And in order to do that, we need to enter the world of Mu. We need to see clearly that we are no thing in particular. In that spacious mind, then each of the 10,000 things arises and reveals itself very clearly and naturally. The image of crossing over is like crossing over to the other shore. And we chant, "Gatte, gatte, para, gatte, para sam, gatte, bodhi swaha." And this translates as, "Gone, gone, gone, all gone to the other shore. Alleluia." There's actually no really direct translation for Bodhi Swaha. It's one of those untranslatable words from the Hindi Sanskrit. But it means something like, "Alleluia, yay, let's go. Bring it on. Hey, guys, let's go." Let's do that. So when the mind is realized and the heart is at rest, we find that deep affinity and intimacy with all beings. I'd like to share just a little personal story here of a surprise meeting with Aitken Roshi. So this case of the monk's expectations on meeting the great master Jiaozhou reminds me of my meeting with Aitken Roshi. I first met Aitken Roshi in the Chinese Buddhist temple in the centre of Chinatown in Sydney in 1979. And there was a meeting that was conducted on the first floor of the Chinese Buddhist temple. And I went down... By the way, I went down to Chinatown a little while ago to try and find if that Chinese temple was still there, and lo and behold, it is sort of not there anymore, and some modern concrete complex has replaced it. But it was a very interesting place, and even on the first floor, you could still hear the bustle and clamour of the street below, and the smells of incense melded with the aroma of Chinese cooking that wafted up from the streets. And there was, as you climbed the stairs, I remember the sort of red paint peeling off the stairs, and coming up to the first floor, there was this red and gold, very gaudy kind of decorative dragon archways, some maybe delightful to some people, but the walls just bombarded my senses with the colour and noise and the sounds and the smells, and the whole place was kind of what I've assumed is a very unlikely place to meet a Zen master. And I had travelled more than 600 kilometres from the wet subtropical northern rivers down to meet Eken Roshin. And his reputation had preceded him. He was known to a handful of people in the Dharma circles in the alternative communities in the northern rivers. This is more than 31 years ago. And so my dear friends Ellen and Lee Davison, who lived on the neighbouring community, had inspired me to meet Eken Roshin. They had studied in Japan, and then they had gone to Hawaii, and they had met Eken Roshin. And so I was then contemplating, oh, will I go take this long journey down to Sydney? It seemed like an incredibly long journey at that time. And whether I would go and meet the great man. And so I decided to throw the I Ching, and lo and behold, the I Ching said, it furthers one to see the great man. So that confirmed the matter. And at that time, I was a very passionate, determined, hardcore yogi, and yet very naive 25-year-old. Full of unrealistic expectations and stories about enlightened sages. I'd expected to meet this great, towering, fierce samurai figure of a Zen master in a serene, austere, holy place. On the contrary, the Chinese temple was this colourful oriental brocade of a place, somewhat like a revamped geisha past her prime. It was not a serene meditation room, but more like an exotic aviary, and with a cacophony of disjointed foreign sounds. And Eken Roshin was just this quiet, revered, serious gentleman with some dandruff on his shoulder, the robes on his shoulder, these robes. So he was real. Yeah. And so a small motley bunch of folk had positioned themselves on the floor of the temple, the bare floor. We weren't given anything to sit on, to listen to this Dharma talk. And after the public talk, I requested a personal interview with Eken Roshin, just to see if I really wanted to sign up to this forthcoming 7-day session, which sounded rather daunting to me at that time. Even though I'd been in intense retreats for 5 years, Vipassana retreats. I was ushered into this tiny little room, which was more like a broom cupboard, and I think it probably was a leftover broom cupboard of the temple, or some kind of confessional cubicle. And suddenly there I was, sitting facing this Zen master. And it was both a strange, terrifying, and exhilarating experience. And I found his black-robed, upright, formal posture and his silent presence and intense gaze somewhat unnerving and confronting. And after my initial moment of shock, I managed to kind of gather myself and ask the most challenging, difficult question I could muster up at 25 years of age. Just to challenge him and think, well, what is he going to say? And I considered myself part of this new age hippie movement of free spirits in the 1970s, the Beat Generation. And yet I was instantly confronted with the formality and traditional etiquette of Zen. And it took me another 10 or 15 years to actually get used to that, by the way. So if you're struggling with some of the formalities and rituals here, you know, be patient. It grows on you. And then becomes quite a beautiful, profound thing. Yet in that tiny cubicle of a moment, my heart opened and I knew that I could trust this quiet, serious man. I could bare my soul to him, which I did. I had come a long way with a heavy heart, with a lot of angst and turmoil in my life at that time. I was in a lot of pain and distress. And I felt indeed that he could meet me and see me. And my heart was not at peace. And here in that bizarre little room was that great stone bridge of Aiken Roshi. I had met a true teacher. And as the door opened, I then sort of, after that meeting, was back in the Chinese temple and making my way downstairs to enjoy Chinese noodles. But little did I know that that moment of trust would span 30 years and pave the way for a deep and long-term commitment and relationship with Zen practice in the Diamond Sangha. So it was a powerful turning point in meeting a true teacher, in meeting that great stone bridge. So I wrote a little haiku for that meeting with Aiken Roshi. I met a stone bridge in a tiny room. My heart fell open, laughing. So the important thing here is to realize your own great stone bridge. This is what our practice is for. So let's try and do that. Let your heart fall open and sit as a great stone bridge that finds your true intimacy and connections with all things, great and small, right here on your cushion.